It's Monday night in Dublin's premier sports pub, the Goat Bar and Grill. The atmosphere is tense. The topic is football. It's the Day Trippers. On tonight's show, our guest Dave Hendrick of the Liverpool Word speaks to us from Australia about some realistic targets for the club in the coming transfer window. Dave's also been busy compiling the world's first thesaurus of Navan English. It's the truest form of the language, and I'm delighted to have him on board to add some more soothing me tones to alleviate all the jackine mumbling that afflicts my poor ears every week. We'll also be joined by that rarest of creatures, an Irish Fulham fan. Rob Canavan from the Final Third podcast will be taking a break from eating his jellied eels and playing his Chaz and Dave records to speak to us about the Colleges. Just how high is Berber's cigarette bill? What now for the Jacko statue? And will Martin Yall get offered a job in Harrods? All this in our regular review, preview, all-time 11 and listeners' questions features. Right, so let's dive straight in with the pick for our all-time 11. This week we're looking at right-sided midfielders. So I'm just going to go ahead and choose my player here. I'm going to go with a three in the centre. And on the right of that three, I'm going to pick the player that Phil is definitely going to pick as well, because he does this every week. And it's Steven Gerrard on the right of a three. I think he had one of his best ever seasons there for Rafa. There's lots of head shaking going on around me, and I don't give a shite. I'm going Steven Gerrard, right of a three. I'm going to go to Stephen Brown next for his shout as a right-sided midfielder.
Right, my formation that I've decided to play in this is 4-2-3-1. So I'm going to wait and hold off with the three in the middle. So the wide right player for me is the best wide right player I've ever seen play for Liverpool, Steve McManaman.
Okay, lovely, lovely.
He just, when he ran with the ball, it was just like poetry in motion. The goal against Celtic just showed exactly what McManaman could do. I think it was the UEFA Cup game. And he proved how good he was by going to Real Madrid and winning two European Cups, starting in each game with the likes of Zidane, Figo, Raul. He was that good.
Okay.
So, Steve McManaman.
Steve McManaman, lovely. Andy Young, your idea.
Again, McManaman for me. I've got four in my midfield, so McManaman plays wide right. Can only echo what Steve was saying. Fantastic Liverpool player. You don't get a player as good on the ball very often for Liverpool, especially. You know the way he was able to beat players, and we haven't seen a player like that since. And it's unfortunate. As Steve says, he went off to Real, and the following year he wins the European Cup and he gets man of the match in the final. So it's McManaman all about.
Lovely stuff. And Phil?
Given that we're on the right side of whatever formation we're going to go with, then it's a clean sweep for Steve McManaman. I don't need to add any more. Shaggy was a legend, and I don't care what anyone thinks.
That's wonderful. I'm delighted that you're not copying me this week. Lovely stuff. Can I ask our guest, Dave, what would you think about a possible candidate for the right side of midfield?
Well, firstly, I'm appalled that there's no shouts for Vladi Schmitzer. That's an outrage.
good man.
To be fair, I'd probably have to go with McManaman as well. He was just a different class. When he was on form, he was the best player in England for a couple of years. It was a one-man team. Even with Fowler and the likes that we had in the team, it was always said, if you stop McManaman, you stop Liverpool. Gerrard would be the only other choice from players I've seen, but yeah, I'd go Steve McManaman.
Lovely, thank you very much. Right, we move straight on to our next little section, which is the review of the Arsenal match. Now, normally I take a look at the good stuff. I tried to be as positive as possible, but let's be honest, positivity is in very short supply. There was a huge amount of moaning and whining and cribbing and all that kind of stuff. So let's take the positive blinkers off, and we'll start with Phil Casey, who loves a moan. It was awful, Phil. You know, we're doomed. Rodgers out. Lucas is shit. Burn Flano. What do you think?
Just getting my little black book out here. Hang on a second, because I was taking notes at the weekend. I know, listen, we could get into many issues that we're going to have with Saturday's game. And yes, the midfield was just appalling from about 20 minutes on. I thought for the first 20 minutes we were well in the game. We pressed fairly high. We pressed decent enough. But again, the goal comes on a counter-attack, and from that point on, we don't really recover well. Our shape goes out the window. I thought it was a bad decision to put John Flanagan in from the start. And that's not to take away from the kid in terms of what he did on the pitch on the day, but I just thought it was the wrong decision to put him in terms of where we are. And then we have a midfield that worked against West Brom. As soon as we concede the goal, Gerrard drops into a no-man's land. He was neither pushed on, he wasn't pressing. He wasn't sitting in the back. He wasn't offering anything defensively, and he wasn't offering anything going forward. Going back to the goal, when you think back to the first goal, although it was Flanagan's man and he lost Cazorla, he runs past Gerrard, and Gerrard, so many times this season, he just watches the man run, doesn't pick him up. Cazorla gets in, and that's how he gets the first shot off, because there's nobody tracks his run at all. The second part of the goal then, Lucas has the same statuesque disease where he lets Cazorla then run past him, not react to him, and then Cazorla has a free chance to slot the ball into the net. Rodgers then goes to try change it in the second half and puts, when we need legs and athleticism in the midfield, he moves Gerrard back into beside Lucas, and the two of them then play standing statues and watch the Arsenal players run around them and basically leave everything that's going on. He went nominally to a 4-2-2-2 type setup with Coutinho nominally left and Henderson nominally right, and then we saw Sturridge and Suarez trying to, one of them drop off and maybe even become a 4-2-3-1 at times in counter-attack. But I just, for the love of me, like I just thought everything that we could do wrong on Saturday, we did wrong. And I thought we were exposed in the midfield. And for the 3-1-4-2 system that we're playing, we need the players to be onside in terms of what we're going to do. And we need to not give up the ghost as easy as we did when we lost the first goal. We completely lost our shape and the way we wanted to play and our setup because of that early goal against us.
Jesus, well, don't want to kill myself after
Jesus
that.
Christ.
That is unbelievable. Dave, I'm going to bring you in. You might as well have a moan, Chief. Will you add to that, please?
Yeah, I thought a lot went wrong. The midfield did work against West Brom simply because we had three and they had two. And Henderson and Gerrard were able to push up against Jakob and Malumbo and force them back, leaving Lucas with very little to do defensively, so he was able to step on a bit more. Arsenal had also floating in front of their two, so they had 3-on-3, and it was clear that, you know, Arteta and Ramsey are a lot better on the ball than Jakob and Malumbo. They were able to play around our pressing, and then once they got the goal, we just fell apart. The goal is just a disaster from pretty much everybody that was involved. Lucas, Gerrard, Sissoko, Skirtle, Kolo and Sacco were all over the place. It was shambles, really. Mm-hmm. And it just got worse from there. And Lucas and Gerrard, after that goal, it was one of the most embarrassing midfield performances I've ever seen from a Liverpool team. They were absolutely shambolic. And personally, I don't think either of them should be in the team at the minute.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think an awful lot of people are kind of rowing in behind that, Dave. Thanks. Andy, what were you feeling about this?
Well, first of all, I just like to applaud Arsenal, not literally. Everything just from their movement on and off the ball, the way they defended Gerrard's free kicks when they get into where he's dangerous. I thought it was quite good where they were so high, and it kind of eliminated the danger. And a special mention there, and Giroud was just outstanding. Again, just to echo what the lads are saying, Rodgers got it wrong. There was a touch of apprentice versus master in how both teams set up. As someone said to me during the match, Wenger must have been praying Liverpool had set up that way, and they did. The midfield battle was essentially 5 versus 3, as kind of Dave was saying. Just taking a look at the goal, just, I know Phil went through it, but I actually don't think it was Gerrard who kind of let Cazorla go. I think Gerrard was pressing the ball, as was Henderson, and they both just got cut out high, which was kind of the wrong thing in hindsight. Arteta makes a free run, pulls Sacco out, plays the ball in behind. Sagna gets the ball, a beautiful ball in, and there's Cazorla just free as Anton, just there to take the ball. Difficult for Skirtle to react, but he doesn't react well enough. Again, the both wing backs are basically redundant. They almost made a 9 versus 11 contest, and even the extra centre back we had made it, you know, 11 versus 8 there for me. So three players in the game, and an extra centre back and the two wing backs, which are just passengers throughout the game. So I just thought overall the setup just completely fucked us up. So after a decent start, it was pressing well. The goal came and we didn't respond and they moved up a gear. So that's worrying for me. I don't think it's going to be long before we see Aga back. I don't think the three boys are playing particularly well. Touré had his worst game for Liverpool. Skirtle got bossed by Giroud, by a good Giroud mind. And Saka, although he was good enough, but I think Aga's going to get back in fairly shortly. And can't really say much more on that, lads.
Okay, thanks a lot, Andy. Stephen, your thoughts on the game?
I think it worked well for the first 15 minutes, and then Arsenal realised that they could play through us when we did press. The first, up until the point when Henderson had the run, when we were on the counter-attack, and Henderson obviously should have done better, scuffed the shot across, there were options for him, but up until that point we were well in the game, and then Arteta and Ramsey took over. It was that simple. I know the lads were saying with five, Arsenal had five in the midfield, they didn't have much weight there, because they're all out wide. The man is a genius. He's only come back from injury, and his touch, if he was playing wide on the left for us, I'd be delighted. He's the epitome of a player who maybe looks like he got pushed out when Ozil came in, because he plays the same position as Ozil, but he obviously looked around, adapted his game, and decided he can still benefit the team. Ozil was on a different level to everyone on the pitch. I don't remember giving the ball away. I don't remember getting caught in possession. Everything he does was so simple, and he just took the right option every time. Again, he was given the space and time to do that. Lucas and Gerrard were, obviously all the lads have said it already, but at this stage, maybe with the Fulham game coming up the weekend, it's the time to take the two of them out of the firing line and give them a rest. Not that they should need a rest, they're professional footballers and they're only playing one game a week. It's not like they're playing Champions League, it's not like they're playing League Cup football. It's just, Saturday just wasn't good enough. But in another kind of way you have to look at it is, we weren't in Arsenal's class, and I just don't think we are in Arsenal's class. I think we all got a bit carried away. Arsenal's the first proper team we played. United aren't. When we played United, they weren't a proper team. United will obviously be up there at the end of the season, but Arsenal are a much more developed team than we are. They're probably 3, maybe 4 years ahead of where we want to be. I think that's the massive issue.
Can I just say, Steve, and just coming in on that, did Ferguson not set down a marker as to how to play and beat an Arsene Wenger team over the years, in that you don't worry about trying to win the possession? What you do is you try catch them on the break and when they expose themselves. And in a way, had we played to the capabilities and the system that we had, we actually had the right players on the pitch. We just didn't at any stage look like we were going to raise the level of a performance. I know, as Dave said, the West Brom midfield weren't really there, but it's really just a case of, did we? I think we dropped back to a level of performance that we played against Newcastle in terms of the midfield and the whole lot. We conceded so much ground to them. Once we conceded the possession, we looked devoid of ideas. Dave, I don't know what you think of that one. Do you think that because this is a system failure, this is a managerial failure, or it's more to do with the personnel that we have and the positions that we have at this moment in time?
I think it's a bit of all three, really. As you've mentioned before, we lined up 3-1-4-2 with Lucas as the one behind the four. But that's fine if you've got someone like Andrea Pirlo who can play the ball forward. Lucas played 56 passes at the weekend. The vast majority of them were to either the centre-backs or the goalkeeper. He very rarely played the ball forward, and when he did, it was five-yard passes to Henderson or to Gerrard. The problem there is that Arsenal are able to push us up and push us back. So when they win the ball off us, they're practically in our own half. Lucas is a good... I'm a well-known critic of Lucas. I don't think he's a good defensive midfielder. I do think he's a decent football player, though. He's a good front-foot player. If Liverpool can get on the front foot in games and start pushing teams back, Lucas is good at being that recycler of a ball who gets it and gives it and just keeps things ticking. But when teams are on top of us, he's a passenger. He just disappears out of games. And I think that's a big issue at the minute. It might have been better for us if Gerrard had played as the one and Lucas had been in the two with Henderson, and at least then they could have pressed on. Lucas obviously doesn't offer much going forward, but he offers energy and he'll press, and Gerrard could have sit and dictated the game. The other problem we had with Lucas was that, like, I heard a lot of people say that Ozil had a quiet game, and Steve mentioned how good Ulster was on the weekend, and a lot of people said he had a quiet game, but he didn't at all. He dictated that game without breaking a sweat. He was picking the ball up. He was dropping into little pockets of space. Lucas was chasing him, and Cazorla and Rizicki were running off the wings, the whole field in front of them, and he was just playing them in. And as you've mentioned as well, Giroud was so good. He was moving, he was picking the ball up, knocking it off, and they just pulled us all around the place. But Ulster was the key to it, and we just couldn't figure him out. Like, there's no number 10 in England anywhere near as good as him. You can have David Silva, you can have Juan Mata. I take Ozil over the two of them combined. He's absolutely incredible. And he was a joy to watch at the weekend. It was a shame it was against us, but, I mean, how can you not enjoy watching football of that calibre with him and Santi Cazorla, who's a little wizard as well? It was brilliant to watch. It was just a shame that it was us they did it to.
Yeah, agree with you.
Dave, I'm just going to keep you on there while you're on, and hopefully we'll keep our connection here. Could I ask you, do you think that will there be any lessons learned, or do you have any hope that things will change for the Fulham match? Did you see anything that Rodgers will definitely do, or do you think it's likely to stay as is?
I think as long as Gerrard decides he's fit to play, he'll play. I think he needs a rest. He's played all our games this year, including the League Cup, unnecessarily. He's played, I think, 90 minutes in all bar one. He's also played four full England games, and that's a lot of football for someone at 33, 34 years of age.
Yeah, for sure.
He
yeah.
just looks tired.
Yeah.
You know, I think it might be time to take him out, give him a game, and have him fit for the derby, and get Joe Allen in. And I think Henderson has to be dropped in beside him instead of Lucas. Lucas just, he's fine when we're playing crap teams who roll over, but anyone that puts it up to us, he just becomes a passenger. So I'd like to see Henderson and Allen with Coutinho in front of them behind the two strikers.
That's lovely. Thanks, Dave. Andy Young, any ideas about what you think might happen to change as a result of the weekend?
Sorry, I just wanted to say to Dave there, do you think that performance spells the end of that formation for Rodgers, or will he continue with that?
I'd like to see him continue with it. I wouldn't like to see Rodgers become a reactionary manager who lets one bad result get in the way of things and just throws it all out. I think he's got more principles than that. And at the minute, I think it's the only way we can carry our midfield, because we don't have a good ball-winning midfielder. Lucas tackles a lot, but he doesn't win a high percentage. Like, he's low 70s. We need someone who's low to mid-80s, like Mascherano used to be. And I think as long as we don't have a proper ball-winning physical presence in that midfield, I think we need the three centre-backs. But I do think one of them should be Agger. I think it should be Agger instead of Skirtle, so we have the option of shifting to maybe a diamond with him stepping out and the midfield rejigging itself.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, Dave. Well, hopefully, like, from my perspective anyway, that Rodgers has learned from that. And when we do play a team like Arsenal again, who congest the middle of the park, that he does think a change in the formation. It was a killer having Johnson out, and I think personnel wise probably would have worked a little bit better. But Fulham, we were only discussing before the cast here, they do congest the midfield as well, and being at home again, I think it's a perfect time now to go back to the 4-3-3, and I hope Rodgers has learned that.
Do you mind not skipping ahead on the agenda there, buddy?
Sorry, what we've learned.
Well, yeah, it does lead into it, to be honest.
What we've learned.
Anyway, Casey's after blowing the whole thing wide open again here. Stephen, the question again, as Andy was answering very, very nicely before Phil interrupted us, will Brendan learn anything specifically from that? Do you think things are going to change as a result of the weekend?
I'm not 100% sure a lot will change. After hearing Roger's comments after the match, ideally Arsenal showed us the way we should be playing. I think this, as I said to you lads on Saturday, the way Arsenal were playing was the philosophy we were sold in the dossier, according to Rodgers, last summer. Ideally, it's just, if we get like that, and if it does take two, maybe 3 years' time to get to that level, I'd be delighted. Mm-hmm. Like, as I said, look, Arsenal keep ticking over, and people have laughed at Wenger for years with ticking over and ticking over and ticking over, getting Champions League football every year. But look at them now. That's what they're obviously aspiring to. I think that's what we need to aspire to as well, because we're not going to be able to compete financially with City or Chelsea, as we've seen in the past with other players. So maybe it is the model to take on. With regards to team shape, I don't see a whole lot changing. I think now, as you said, we said last week and the week before, we kind of stumbled upon to this 3-1-4-2 or whatever way you want to call it. I really think that he's going to persist with it. I think there are, Arsenal are probably the best possession team in the Premiership. Therefore, that system is probably going to work against the majority of teams. It's just that Arsenal are good enough to step up and play through us. That's all we're going to see. So, no, ideally, I'd like, as Dave said, I'd like to see him stick with the same formation to a point that if it does work well and good, like, in fairness, he was prepared to change it at half time when he seen it wasn't working. So it's not as if it's an unflexible formation that this is the only, it's not hodgeball. It's not 4-4-2. You know what I mean? It can be changed mid game, it can be changed at any point in the game. So, with regards to that, no, I'd like to see it kept.
Phil, have you any thoughts about lessons learned?
Yeah, I think that when we look at it, that if Rodgers is going to be proactive in terms of how he manages this situation, he'll look at where his midfield has let him down. He'll look at the likes of Henderson and potentially Allen to give him the legs and dynamism in those even two advanced positions or two defensive positions, just to put some legs on the actual pitch. If he wanted to go to a 3-4-1-2, I'd ideally like to see Allen and Henderson get a run in there with, say, even playing Gerrard at 10 or Coutinho at 10, whichever he wants to do. I would not have an issue at this stage now if Lucas and Gerrard were rested out of the actual team. And a bit like Pellegrini has done with, say, Hart and the whole lot, to give them the kick up the hole, to say to themselves, listen, we're here in a position, a strong position of getting into a top four Champions League place. We're still in third, regardless of what happened at the weekend. We're still in a very strong position to challenge for the top four. And in reality, we need to build on the good things that we have. My concern is that Rodgers may have lost faith in Allen for whatever reason. And my biggest concern is that in certain instances, there seems to be players who are immune from this type of reaction, this type of managerial sort of, I'll cut you out of the team, like he's scared last year, or Agger now, who's sitting on the actual bench. And yeah, or Henderson, as it was at the time. And now we're in a position where there seems to be some players that he won't drop out of the team, the likes of Lucas, the likes of Gerrard, regardless of their performance levels, when it's clear that both of them are not at the level that we expect them to be at, and they're struggling to get back to that level, be it Lucas getting back to it or be it Gerrard reaching the level he played in last year. I know Dave mentioned playing Gerrard in that deepest of the positions, but I'd hate to see him there. I genuinely don't think the guy can control the tempo of a match. He may have the passing ability to play good counter-attacking passes, but I just don't see him having the tactical ability to play in that controller style midfield. Like when we talk about Andrea Pirlo, who plays there for Juventus, he has such a tactical awareness to what's going on and covers gaps and the whole lot. I just don't see it with Gerrard.
But we've seen it for years. When we had one for years with Alonso, apart from Pirlo, was maybe the best example of that player in the world.
I think though the other issue comes back to when we bought for a certain setup, which was the 4-3-3 that Rodgers brought in, and as we know from the being Liverpool, his intentions was to play Gerrard higher up the pitch in terms of either. Remember, he was talking about playing him on the right of the three up front when we were watching that being Liverpool, and you look at Joe Allen, he was brought in to play in the position that Steven Gerrard found himself in when we did play the 4-3-3 in that sort of shuttler controller position just ahead of the defensive midfielder, and now we're trying to shoehorn Joe Allen into a different position to the one that we actually signed him for. So when you ask what will Brendan do, it'll be interesting to see, because this is a chance now for him to step up and show that he's learnt as much as that, you know, that there's various things and that he is prepared to drop the players if he has to drop the players.
All right, lovely. That's, I suppose, as decent a segue as any into our next section, which is our chat with Dave, who's on the line from Australia. It's a bit of a scouting feature, I guess, looking at potential targets for Liverpool. We'll be doing it again in January and again as the summer window approaches. So on the back of the weekend's poor showing, I suppose most of us are thinking about targets like Mkhitaryan, like Eriksen, like Strootman, who are missed out in the last window. So we'd like to focus on a couple of key positions that clearly need reinforcement. Now, we've already been speaking about defensive midfield, so that's as good a place to start as any. Dave, you've been very vocal on Twitter. I've followed with some heartache your line of commentary on Lucas. Would you have any suggestions to get our ball rolling here on who we might be looking at in that position come the next transfer window?
Yeah, well, I think defensive midfield has been the biggest need for us for about 4 years now, and I was sort of one of the first to get on the Mkhitaryan train and before the summer and big him up, and I was pretty disgusted that we didn't get him, because it should have been done. But I think the biggest need in the summer wasn't an attacking midfielder, it was a defensive midfielder. And while he was a big miss, the ones we missed out on were the ones we didn't go for, the likes of Kapuei, Wanyama, Gilavogi, even Gary Medel. Like, these are players that would have improved us.
I love Gary Medel.
Don't break my heart over Gary Medel.
He's like Ian Mascherano with extra lunacy.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming into January, I think we've probably got about 20 to 25 million to play with, plus if we sell anybody, Skirtle or somebody could go. For me, I'd be going straight in for Jan Mavia. He's at Rubin Kazan the last couple of years. I mean, a £25 million player. He's one of the top five defensive midfielders in the world when he's at his best. But he went off the rails for a little while, and teams got scared. Wenger got scared, and a couple of other Spurs were in for him and then backed away. And then he went to Russia, and he seems to have matured. I think he's focused now on his family. He's got two young kids. And I saw an interview with him recently enough, and he was talking about how he feels he's matured quite a bit and fatherhood has really helped him. So he'd be my first choice. I don't think you'd really look beyond him if you could get him. I think somewhere between 10 and 14 million would get him. I think somewhere between 10 and 14 million would probably get him. If failing that, if you wanted to go with a safer option, the likes of Maxime Gonelon's at Lille, or Lyon rather, Napoli have been quoted about 80 million pounds. He'd bring leadership, organisation. He's very intelligent. He's got plenty of experience as well. You could go for Odil Amadov from Anzhi. Anzhi are still clearing out players. He could be got cheap enough, maybe about 8 million. Likes of Fernando Regis at Porto. He's a fantastic defensive midfielder, hugely underrated. I've never understood how he hasn't played for Brazil when someone like Lucas has 22 caps in the same position. And this vastly superior player hasn't been called up. But you could maybe go in for him with his 8 million. If they didn't accept it, maybe try and get him on a pre-contract and then lowball them again. Kind of like what Spurs did with Lewis Holtby last year. Okay. There's one that's been linked to us is Rajan N'Golan at Cagliari. Young, five, he's Belgian. And he's a ball winner. He's on the ball, but he's a good player. And he'd probably be cheap enough as well. They'd be the main five that I'd focus on. If you wanted to go with a wild card, Blaz Matuidi at PSG is one of the best in the world, and we should have had him, and Camoli had him pretty much wrapped up, and he said, no, let's get Charlie Adam instead. His contract's up next summer. They seem to be eyeing Paul Pogba from Juve, and they haven't really addressed his contract. So
PSG seem to be eyeing
maybe
Pogba.
Maybe you go and try and get him.
I suppose from taking Dave's list and looking at the defensive midfielders, myself looking at it, Fernando Regis has to be very high in the list. He's got 6 months left in his contract coming into January. He seems to tick all the boxes in terms of that he'd be ready to go into your first 11. He has the playing style. He's played in different systems since he's been at Porto, from ABB's type of 4-3-3 to the manager that followed him the whole lot. So for me, he's definitely one that's there. I'd also be looking at the likes of Sebastian Rode that's coming up as well to the end of his contract, although there was talk that he may have a pre-contract already in place with Bayern Munich, but I'm not sure about that. And my own hobby horse is Havard Nordveit of Borussia Mönchengladbach. He came through the Arsenal ranks, and Borussia snapped him up, and he's that type of defensive midfielder / centre back / utility back, very similar to the way that say Marcus Babbel was able to play across the back four, and also did stints in defensive midfield. So he'd be the type of player now that I'd be hoping to see us come in on.
Okay, lovely. Steve, would you have any shouts there that you'd particularly like?
I have to agree with the Jan and Villa show. After seeing Jan and Villa play for France, last year in the Euros, seriously impressed with the fella. And as Dave said, he has his head screwed on now. Yeah, there was the issues that he had when he was still in France and so on and so forth. But moving to Russia, it's obviously after making him grow up and cop on. So my shape would be him, just personally, because I think he's ideally fit. He would ideally fit our system. He's mobile, he's quick, he can pass. He's everything that you want in a defensive midfielder, really.
Okay, lovely. We might take a look now at the next position along, which is right back. Back to yourself, Dave, here. You some ideas for us on potential right back candidates.
Yeah, just one quick point on Envia before I go on to that. He's the same agent as Sacco, and they're really close friends. They've played together through the French ranks probably for the last 8-9 years, so they're quite close, and he might look at Sacco coming to Liverpool to kind of restart his international career and think, you know, if it's working for Sacco, it can work for him. So that could be another thing to get him.
Absolutely.
So move on to right back. I think what we have to look at with right back is obviously Glenn Johnson's going to be first choice for at least until the end of this season, possibly the end of next season. He may get sold because he's on huge wages, and he's probably coming to the end of the time when he'll fetch a decent fee. You could look at someone like, say, Sam Byram at Leeds. He's a very, very promising young player. He can play right back, he can play on the wing, and he can play centre midfield. He'd probably be ideal as a wing back. And he'd probably be happy enough to come in and learn from. Another one there would be at Socha. Young French right back, very attack minded, great delivery of the ball, great dead ball delivery. It reminds me a bit of Cerna. Just in the way he carries himself. He's a bit quicker, but the way he crosses the ball is fantastic. You don't see it very often from fullbacks. Like Leighton Baines, obviously, is a prime example of a great crossing fullback, but he's right up there. Oliver Sorg at Freiburg is a right-footed... He plays left-back, but he's naturally right-footed. He's been compared quite favourably to Philipp Lahm over the last six or eight months. And, you know, he'd be... The quality addition. He could come in and maybe play left back for 6 months and then switch across, which would solve the problem we have at left back, where Sissoko, like, I like Sissoko, but I just don't know if he's going to fit in for us, and I think Enrique's brain dead, so, you know, Sorg could fit there and then move across.
Harsh day, but good, yeah, okay.
There's another young English right back, Liam Moore. He's at Leicester. He can also play centre-back, but I think he's a better right-back, and he's probably better defensively than he is going forward, but he's decent going forward. He's a good outlet. He's good on the ball. He's calm, and he can pick a pass pretty well. You could look at, if you wanted to go with sort of a big money, maybe someone like Danilo from Porto. He's probably the future Brazil right-back, and he's very, very talented. If it was me and I had my way, I'd probably offer Daniel Agger to Barca in January and say, like, give us 12 million and Martin Montoya. Agger deserves to move, I think. I love him, but I think he deserves to play for a club who are going to win things sooner than we are. And Montoya would solve our right-back slot for 10 years.
Dave, just coming in there, in my own head, I was thinking Sebastian Young out in, is it Stuttgart he's at? Or I can't remember. I can't remember the team that he's at, but the young German lad who's already got a couple of caps. When you're talking about Oliver Sorg there, and again, like Lam, he's comfortable playing either side, but he would solve the right back issue. And then the other thing that's cropped up to my mind in this, and it keeps coming back to me, when are we going to use Thiago Alori? Like, when we were told about Thiago Alori, it was that he could play across the back, he could play right back, he could play left back, and he could play centre back. And even looking at the weekend, we put John Flanagan, an 18-year-old who hadn't played in nearly two seasons, in instead of playing Thiago Alori. You know, I think myself, I like the idea of Sorg, or I just like the idea of a German. I think when we were all picking our favourite ever right backs, Marcus Babbel was high up the thing, and we liked the idea of Germans in the Liverpool first 11. So I'd definitely be on the German tip anyway for getting either Sorg or Sebastian Jungen.
Dave, can I torpedo this a la Casey for a second? I've just something's just occurred to me here now. It's probably completely stupid, but moving away from right back for a minute, one of the best prospects I've seen at the moment is Shaw on the left hand side. Do you think we'd have a snowball's chance in hell again? I've heard links with Chelsea and stuff like that, but you know, he'd be guaranteed his first team place and stuff. Would we have a snowball's chance, do you think, of a lad like that, who's such a wonderful prospect?
I absolutely love Luke Shaw. He's the best young left back I've seen, I think, probably ever, like, since I've been watching football.
Big shout.
He's ridiculously good, and he's only 18.
Yeah.
He's only 18, and you look at him, and he looks levels above every other left back in England.
Yeah.
With the exception of his top, and maybe Gael Clichy when he decides he wants to play well. But he's so comfortable on the ball. He's very good defensively. He's strong. He's good in the air. For a teenager, his positional sense is ridiculously good. But again, as he said, he could get his first team place at Liverpool. And obviously, they're going to want big money. They're probably going to want 15 million. And I've seen a few people say, oh, it's too much to pay for a left back. But if you're buying a player who can be your first choice player for 15 years, it's a million a year to have a boss left back. Which we haven't had ever, like, well, not in the last 20 years, anyway.
Yeah, well, that's
the days of sticking a Bjornaby.
Yeah, exactly. What a gem he was. That's exactly why I bring it up, Dave. I think it's something that would be worth a punt, surely. Certainly worth thinking about.
Well, if we're looking at the likes of Will Hughes, who's 18 at Derby, big prospect for his future, and we're talking about paying big money for him, it would make sense to go after Luke Shaw. Even if we can't get him, at least go and try. You know, and if we don't get him, there's a couple others around Europe. There's Alexandro at Porto, Ricardo Rodriguez at Wolfsburg, Oliver Sorg. You know, there are good left-backs out there, but he should definitely be the number one choice. And if we don't get him, we don't get him. We move on to the next one. But don't just, you know, don't do what we did with Wanyama and just wave him as he passes us by. You know, because that'd be criminal.
Yeah, I agree completely. We'll keep you on while you're there, and we'll move on to attacking midfielder and potential targets for attacking midfielder. Do you have anything in mind for us there, Dave?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Obviously Mkhitaryan was my pick for the summer. I adore him. He's just fabulous. He's a brilliant finisher, works hard, he's humble as anything. I'd go for Yevhen Konoplyanka from Dnipro in Ukraine, the Ukrainian left winger. He can play right wing and he can play as a playmaker as well, but if you've seen the last three Ukraine-England games, he's the guy who's ripped a new arsehole into the England right back. He did it twice to Glenn Johnson. Glenn Johnson's quick, Kyle Walker's lightning quick, and Konoplyanka made them look like they were running in concrete boots. It was insane. It's insane how quick he is.
Yeah.
And he's young as well. He's only 22, 23. And apparently his club have said they're willing to let him leave at the right price. And it could be 15, 20 million, but I think he's a huge prospect. I think he'd be well worth a chance. A couple of others. We were linked with Yarmolenko in the summer. He might be worth looking at again. He can be a bit hit and miss. He's a bit selfish. We'll be linked with Arda Turan because we're always linked with Arda Turan.
As we always are, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What about Quaresma?
Yeah, Quaresma sex, yeah.
Well, with David Villa gone to Atletico Madrid and no chance of him, I think it'd be double time on Arda Turan.
Yeah.
There's a couple of attacking midfielders with expiring contracts. There's Diego Ribas at Wolfsburg, who is like the 28-year-old Coutinho. He's a little genius, but he's never quite hit the heights he should have at a big club. Like, he went to Juventus and it didn't work out, but at Werder Bremen, Atletico Madrid and now Wolfsburg, he's been fantastic. There's Roberto Firmino at Hoffenheim. He's got a contract expiring. The only issue with him might be that he might not get a work permit, but we'd have to try and find out. He's scored 7 goals already this season from midfield in the Bundesliga, so that's a pretty good effort. It could be all competitions, but 7 goals already. If we wanted to go big and maybe look at someone who was a big prospect and has kind of hit a wall, you could look at Iker Muniain at Bilbao. He's a lovely little player. He's brilliant on the ball. He's very intelligent. Loads of potential. But Bilbao are Bilbao, and you know they might get arsy about people trying to steal.
He's
a wild card I'd look at. Sorry, say again,
Dave. There's talk that Muniain has been struggling lately with personal stuff. I don't know what the personal stuff was, but they were saying that his form has sort of dipped because of it. Now that would probably lead into what you're saying, that he does need a move away from sort of could well be to get away from what's gone on in Bilbao, because he's been through a lot with Bielsa, and you know most of the Bilbao players that have come out of there while they were fantastic under him in that fourth season, they seem to have suffered mentally as a result of Iloco's tactics and ways of managing the team as well. Just to ask you on one thing, I've been thinking about this as well, and there's Shaqiri at Bayern. He's not getting a game. He could be a good loan shout even for 6 months. And also, Kevin De Bruyne, or De Bruyne at Chelsea. I'm a huge fan. I know Steve Brown is a huge fan of Kevin De Bruyne as well. And when you look at him play, he reminds me so much of a young Gerrard. Between the gait, his running style, his playing style, I think he'd light up Liverpool. And I think he'd be one that if we spent money on, we'd definitely get a return long term out of him.
Yeah, Kevin De Bruyne has the potential to be, we're not going to say the next Gerrard because that's ridiculous, but he has the potential to be somewhere near that level. I haven't seen him play last year in Germany, and obviously the little bits and pieces that he did get with Chelsea at the start of the season before he picked up the injury, he was absolutely smashing. But my absolute dream, at the realistic dream, would be Shaqiri from Bayern, because having seen him play for Bayern, the little bits he gets with Bayern, which isn't a whole lot, and then seeing the bits he plays with the national team or Swiss national team as well, the kid has it all. And he looks like he just needs someone to believe in him. I don't think Guardiola does. I don't think Guardiola trusts him. So maybe the possibility of a loan shout, but there's obviously connotations there with Suarez at the end of the season and so on and so forth with Bayern. So you have to be very careful with that kind of side of things as well.
Okay, thanks, Steve. I'm still reeling a little bit from the whole running gait style and that Phil came up with there.
It's very,
very, very Alex Ferguson indeed. it's a real worry. I'm thoroughly disturbed here. Dave, thanks a million for the insights there. We're going to move on to our next sequence now, which is our preview of the weekend's game. Right, it's time for our preview of the Fulham game at Rob. Of the final third podcast, we're delighted to have Rob on this evening with us. You're very welcome, Rob. We normally start with a look at what Liverpool's team is going to be. Following the poor results of the weekend, do you think maybe there's going to be changes in both?
Just to answer an earlier question, I don't think Liverpool will change. I don't think Fulham will change either. I think it's going to be a 4-2-3-1, same as it's been all season. Scott Parker and Sidwell in midfield and Berbatov up front. Martignol hasn't changed for any reason so far, and I just can't see him changing again.
Right, and is that a source of frustration to you, Rob?
Absolutely, yeah. Particularly games like Liverpool away, I don't think you should be setting up with Berbatov up top or a 4-2-3-1. I would prefer to see something like five at the back. You know, two wingers, that might help out, because it's obviously going to be more of Liverpool. But we're going to set up with the same formation that we've been beaten by United, beaten by Southampton away with. And it's going to be the same old problems, gap between the midfields and the defence, which obviously Suarez and Sturridge will feed off. And their movement will be crucial, I feel.
Okay, well, what would you prefer to see? I mean, if you had a magic wand, you could wave an old Baron von Greenback there, Martignol. What would you do to change the lineup?
I would firstly, like I said, I would pay three centre-halves at the back with two wing-backs to tuck in. Three across the midfield and two up front. You could play whoever you wanted, really. Berbatov and Ruiz. You play Ruiz and Bent. It doesn't really matter, to be honest with you. Mm. But just to give yourself the protection at the back, because, like I said, the movement and the hole between the back and the midfield for Fulham is where any team has killed us so far this season. But particularly, I feel that with the front two that you guys have moving around and shifting positions, we're not going to be able to pick them up. You know, I mean, I don't think Hangeland's going to be fit for the weekend either. So it's going to be Senderos and Amor Vieira more than likely at centre half. So, I mean, it was a horror show against United in the first 22 minutes, and I don't think I'll get better this weekend either, to be honest.
Okay, well, what do you think are the strengths of your team as it stands, given that you think it's unlikely that there's going to be much of a change in the lineup? What are the more positive aspects of Fulham as Fulham is?
Strengths this season, I think we've a lot of individual quality. Some of the players we have, I mean, anyone I've spoken to who's not a Fulham fan looks at some of the players we have and says they're game changers, and they have proved to be a certain extent. I mean, the game against Palace showed. I mean, Kasami's goal was unbelievable, you know, and then Berbatov scored as well. I mean, we've some players who can just turn it on and change games, but the Fulham teams of the past that I liked were hard work and average players, whereas now we've got kind of over the hill, you know, quality players. So strength wise I mean, as much as they give out about him, we have Berbatov. I mean, he can do pretty much anything on his day, you know, but and or all the other days. So not a huge amount to be positive about at the moment.
Rob, hi, Stephen. Just a quick question for you, man. How many of these days has Berbatov had for Fulham? I look at Berbatov and I love Berbatov. I love the way he plays. I love his style. Just everything about him. But I'm not too sure if I'd want him up front for Liverpool in a must-win game.
He's a lot of Fulham fans want him out at the moment, to be honest with you. Not out of the squad, not out of the team, but to be dropped for a time, you know, kind of a reflection period. As for days that he's had, I could probably pick them individually. I mean, there was the draw with Arsenal away last season, 3-3. He was outstanding. He was pretty good against Palace, but that was because he was dropped deep. He wasn't used as the lone striker. You know, he was allowed to become involved. Other than that, no, he really hasn't. He hasn't showed up for a consistent 90 minutes. I mean, he's yet to score in front of the Hammersmith end for Fulham, which is, you know, kind of that's the big home end that we have. It's unbelievable he hasn't actually managed to score there yet. So,
Rob, it's Phil here. What's the situation with the goalkeepers? So Stockdale started the season, then Stekelenburg is coming in. I'm amazed that Stekelenburg didn't start as the starting keeper. I actually thought that Stekelenburg, when he went to Rome, was going to be a success, and he failed over there. And then when he came to Fulham, I was convinced he was going to be another Van der Sar. So what am I missing with the chap? Because he was brilliant at Ajax until he got injured that time before he went to Roma.
Yeah, well, at the start of the season, he was. I mean, he was brought in as number one. That was always going to be the case. He was meant to come in January, but he was called back mid-flight from Rome because they had failed to sign another keeper. He did start the season. He injured himself. He knocked his shoulder injury, turned into something serious, and then Stockdale had to fill in. So he came back for the Southampton game. He's since leaked 10 goals in 4 games, so he hasn't actually been fantastic, you know. Not helped by the guys in front of him. I think Stekelenburg is a quality goalkeeper. I mean, I've seen him for Holland. Like you say, I've seen him for Ajax as well in Roma, and he looks really, really good. So I imagine we have a very, very good number one, but I mean, he hasn't had a fantastic start by any means.
Rob, give us a little bit of a jolly up as Liverpool supporters and tell us what your weaknesses are. Give us something to make us smile here, Rob.
The real problem this season is that there's not just one area of weakness. I mean, I know you guys are going to be delighted to hear this.
That's great. Keep it going, yeah?
There seems to be two really huge areas, right? Fulham really struggle to link up with their attack. There is absolutely nobody moving up front, so they have the least shots on target. But they had none against Southampton away, which is just appalling. Then, they also fail to defend very well. They don't seem to pick up men when they move. Any kind of movement seems to throw them off. So we've conceded from set pieces, we've conceded from corners, we've conceded from slide ball. So unless he drills the team all week, Martinelli doesn't seem to really coach the team so much as pick the players, put them out in a 4-2-3-1 and say, off you go, lads. That seems to be the way it works. But I think a team like Fulham needs to be drilled, you know, day in, day out to do certain things like Roy Hodgson did.
Yeah, sure. Well, if we were to push you then, given your comparative pessimism, not dissimilar to our own, what would you think in terms of prediction? How would you see the match going?
Oh, it was what? It was 5-0 last year?
God.
This really depends. It really depends on how early Liverpool score. I mean, keep them out for long enough, maybe there'll be a bit of pressure from the home crowd or something like that. But I would say 2-3-1 Liverpool. I can see Fulham scoring, but only after Liverpool scored.
Rob, what should we look out for? Like, as you were saying about the great movement from your front four in terms of pressing other teams and all that, right? When our weaknesses tend to be when teams really press on against us and play with a high sort of tempo against us and pin our back three back or back four back. Or is there any chance the Fulham are going to do this to us at all? Like, I'm looking at an agent Sidwell and an agent Parker in the centre midfield, and I'm thinking to myself, Jesus, we should have more than enough to take it. Now, like, I mean that with the greatest respect, but it's just, you know, I can't see, bar the brilliance of Ruiz and Berbatov, I'm struggling to see where the threat comes from yourselves.
No, I can't see us giving too many problems. I mean, pressing isn't a strong suit of Fulham's game, especially with the age, like you said. I don't know if you've seen matches today at the weekend, they actually broke down. De Gea had the ball, Vidic had the ball, and they actually scored from it with not one player pressing them. So I don't think there's any concern there. Unless, of course, there's some kind of bounce back from the negative reaction at the weekend. I mean, Yol's under a huge amount of pressure. Ruiz got bad reception, but I'm actually a huge fan of Ruiz. I think he's played out of position, which is always hard on a player, you know. And a lot of fans are always drawn towards him because he did cost £10 million, which makes him the most expensive player in the squad, you know. So
Yeah.
The fact that he hasn't earned goals means he's not getting a lot of support from the fans. No, I can't see Fulham playing a pressing game. Even if they were to use Bent up front, he's not a pressing player. You know, he just sits up top off the shoulder. So, unless you play completely badly, I suspect he'd be okay. I mean, Fulham have only won once in Liverpool anyway, so...
Yeah. Rob, this is all very reassuring indeed. We're loving this. But to be fair, if you're looking at us, and clearly we're far from the finished article, where does the optimistic Fulham fan think they can get at us?
Well, I mean, before, maybe go back three games, Liverpool seemed to perform in the first half and then score and then drop off in the second half and defend, which seemed to work. I mean, you have enough points doing that. If you were to do that against Fulham, there does seem to be something in Martin Jones' squads where they come back once they've conceded. I mean, they did play much better against United in the second half. They really did. Mm. But that's the only way I could see something coming from it, is that if Liverpool turn out a job done 1-0, say 2-0, and then let the second half be, you never know. We have got some options on the bench that likes to trap to, who has yet to really perform, but you know, he's so inconsistent, he might just surprise you. But that's the only way I could see it, is that if Liverpool in their own minds turn around and say, these lads aren't up to it, you know, we've got our job done, 45 minutes to go, type of thing. You never know.
Okay, Rob, listen, thanks very much. That's been very insightful indeed. That's Rob Canavan there from the Final Third podcast. Really appreciate your contribution there, Rob. Thanks a million, man.
No worries.
In the wake of that interesting chat with Rob Canavan there, Andy, your thoughts about what you think Liverpool are going to look like in the weekend?
Yeah, it's a very difficult one to call. I think in the last sort of four games, we've seen the kind of the good, bad and the ugly of this formation. So the temptation has to be there for Rodgers to revert back to a 4-2-3 or a more familiar kind of lineup, you know, that we were used to last season. Whether he does or not, it's just hard to say. Does he look at the Arsenal game and say, look, on the day we're beaten, as he said in his press conference, we're beaten by the better side, and then just go along with it and kind of hope you have another performance like they did against West Brom? Or does he look forward into other games that are coming up, more difficult games, where he might have to try different shapes and use this as an opportunity to maybe just go out all at them, you know? So, like, my inkling is he stays with a similar shape, and maybe there's a couple of changes in personnel. Hopefully Johnson's jaw or whatever it was wrong with him is better. And Alan possibly comes into the team at the expense of... He's not going to drop Gerrard. I don't want him to drop Gerrard anyway, right? But at maybe at the expense of Lucas. So realistically, I think it could be the 3-4 the formation we've been used to again, but with a couple of changes. But what I would like to see is them go back to a back four. I'd like to see Agger come back into the team, and Coutinho then in behind Well, I wouldn't mind seeing Moses, Suarez, and Sturridge.
Or like a diamond at the top, yeah, as opposed to.
It's more kind of like to see. It's probably it's highly unlikely it's going to look that way. I think he will stick with the same formation, but I think it's a good opportunity. I think no matter what setup Liverpool go with, they're going to have enough for Fulham. I mean, I think it's a must-win game, and I think they will win. I think no matter what way they play, it could, you know, they have enough for them. But just for going forward purposes, I think I wouldn't mind seeing a bit of a change in the formation.
Phil, any different idea on that?
Well, there's definitely a severe dose of optimism after creeping in there after the chat to Rob. I haven't felt this optimistic about a match. My optimism's running at 87 now after that chat. But I think, honestly, listening to what he said and looking at Fulham the last couple of weeks, if we put 11 players out onto the pitch and attack them and play even to 50% of our potential, given that Fulham seem to be a team low in confidence and don't seem to have the ability to press like the teams who have given us trouble have, we should be able to win. I think Andy's onto something in terms of trying out players and trying out different systems, particularly in games like this, but there's definitely the pressure that's on now that we've put ourselves into a top four position regardless of the results at the week. We're still third. Beat Fulham at the weekend and Arsenal fail to beat United, whether it's a draw or not, we close the point gap that opened up last week. And like on the plus side, we've got Coutinho back. we've got, as you said, you've Moses who can come in and change the shape, the shape quite simply to give us more width if we want to go that way. We've got pace in the side through Sturridge and Moses and Coutinho, and Sterling is there on the bench as well. The only issue for me remains the centre midfield and how we set up there. But I think, for me anyway, given that what we've talked about here, I think this is the idea. With a lack of League Cup games and no Cup games to January, if ever there was a game you wanted to try out Joe Allen and, say, a Henderson midfield, then this is the game to try it out, have Gerrard on the bench, and to be able to bring him in and rescue it, as he's done many a time. And I think, for me anyway, personally, I think Gerrard is the perfect impact sub at his age at this moment in time for us. That if we need, we have somebody in Coutinho who can deliver the attack and trust and the assists and that sort of verve that Gerrard used to bring to the table. And if we need somebody else, we can spring Gerrard from the bench. It's something that Steve said last week about horses for courses, and for me anyway, this is one to use horses for courses, and bring in Joe Allen, bring in Henderson into the centre mid. Put Coutinho in. If we want to play 3-4-1-2, sure, let's try 3-4-1-2 with the two boys there playing as two real box to box midfielders who can retain possession, and let Coutinho roam behind the front two of Suarez and Sturridge. That doesn't work. We have the bodies then to change it around on the bench.
Yeah, in all fairness, and to go back to something that you said last week, to be fair to you, we were defeated against the league leaders away. There is a healthy dose of perspective probably needed here. I know I got the hump list. I had to get away from Twitter and the likes of that on Saturday. It was just horrible. People are just full of negativity and needlessly so. Stephen, do you think what we're looking at is a change in personnel against Fulham, or do you see a system change, or with Phil Coutinho, for example, now ready to go, what does that do? I mean, somebody's going to give way there, surely, because that kid has to play, doesn't he?
It's going to be an intriguing one on Saturday. With Coutinho back, it's going to be very intriguing, because the 3-1-4-2 or whatever way you want to doesn't work with Coutinho. Coutinho's not a left wing back. He's not going to play as one of the two pressing. So it's very intriguing as to where he's going to do. Unless we talk about this flipping the triangle and all this bullshit, basically. Is he going to play
flipping behind a pancake?
Yeah, basically, yeah. But is he going to play behind Sturridge and Suarez? Is he going to go 4-3-3 and play Coutinho coming from wide and Suarez coming from wide behind Sturridge, which is ideally what I'd like to see? I do think we have more than enough to deal with Fulham. After having a chat with Rob there, I think even more so now. I can't wait for Saturday, because I'm going to be there. Whether I see the game Saturday or not, that's a whole other question. So I'm going to have to record it anyway. But no, I do think it's got. I can see one change. And
well, who's out? Who's out for Phil?
You see, it all depends. We can see one change if we stick with the 3-4-1-2. If we go 4-3-3, I can see more than one change. I think Coutinho needs to start, as the lad said there. I want to see Henderson and Allen. This is the kind of game that we can see Henderson and Allen.
Stay with you for a minute, seeing as you're in a run there. What do you think we need to look out for from Fulham particularly? We had some interesting ideas there from Rob about what their strengths and weaknesses are. What do you think on that topic?
With the way Fulham's set up, Ruiz coming from wide can be dangerous. Berbatov, when he fancies it, we've seen Berbatov a couple of years ago, and granted it was a couple of years ago when he scored the hat-trick against us. When Berbatov looks interested, he's brilliant. He's brilliant, and he could give Skrtel an awful time. Skrtel could decide that he's going to try and wrestle with him, and Berbatov will just take him to the cleaners. Just with touches, he'll just touch the ball around him and he could be in trouble that way. Again, it's very hard to see where Fulham's strengths lie. We've a better midfield. All over the pitch, we're a better side. There shouldn't be, if you look at it in the cold light of day, there shouldn't be a problem. But obviously, that's football. That's why we go to the games.
I just hope that, as we said, that we don't become complacent in this game. I don't think they will. I think we've learned how to play against teams that are lesser than us. It's something that we suffered with for the last two or three seasons. I just hope they don't become complacent, and that we actually go out, put the performance in that we want to see, and, you know, win the game. Look, I come around the table. I know when we were talking about the Arsenal game, etc., over the weekend, a lot of us were downbeat about what had happened. But in the cold light of day, if Everton hadn't a drawn with Tottenham, if that hadn't been a draw and Tottenham or Everton had a winning and Chelsea had a winning, we would have been here with knives out and everything sharp and ready to gut somebody, right? But the way it turned out, that the only people that really benefited out of this week's end results were Arsenal, who have now got a 5-point lead over everyone, and United and City come well back into contention for chasing Arsenal for that top spot. We as I said last week, this was one game that we could actually, for the first time in a long, long time, go in and not worry that if we lost, that we suddenly lost everything or that we were way behind everybody. We're well in the hunt for the top four. And as I said, if Arsenal don't win at the weekend, we've got a good chance of closing the gap again. Okay. And
I know psychologically, you know, it's nice to be in the top four and, you know, going into games, there's a bit of confidence just being there. But it's just important that they maintain this level of how many points they're getting per game. Like, they're averaging two points per game. Yeah. So, out of a possible 30, there's 20. That's 76 points. Am I right?
That's
top four. Last season, yeah. I think Spurs missed out by a point on top four with 71 points. So that's Champions League form. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, there's nothing to be ashamed of being beaten by Arsenal in the Emirates. No. It was just hard to see them turn over like they did. But fucking 3 points the weekend is going to be awful.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm scared these days that there's a vein of optimism running through my veins, which hasn't been there for a long, long time. It's actually frightening me now at the moment, Trev.
Yeah.
Put your arm around me, Trev.
No, there's no chance.
Trev.
It's not going to happen.
Please hold me, Trev. I don't know what's going on here.
The simplest way to resolve this is get you thinking about something negative. So you kind of dodged the issue there. What do we need to worry about with Fulham? Don't say Berbatov, because Stephen, who models himself in Berbatov,
has you haven't seen me play.
I've heard the stories there. I've heard the stories. Stroller.
Nuts.
What do we need to worry about from now?
Set pieces.
Yeah,
if we give away set pieces, if it's a tight game, say we don't take our chances, which has happened in games, and even at the weekend, let's talk about that disallowed goal. Like, that was outrageous. That it wasn't allowed. That could have changed the game. It could have been 1-0. Sturridge had a great header with 15 minutes to go that could have given us a charge of the light brigade for the last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Henderson had that chance that crossed on a bike. Like, honestly, he's running through and you're just going, please don't fluff it.
His head just went. He got into the box and his head went.
Yeah. And then he had a second chance with that volley. Yeah. Remember the volley that he skied over the bar as well, which had, that being Suarez or Sturridge that was standing at the back post, you would have fancied him to get it on target and get the save.
Me, I asked you to come up with something negative. You're flying again here, kid. This is lovely. Go.
I know it's the antidepressants. I'm flying these days. Well, in reality though, it's the set pieces. If I'm looking at Fulham, I'm looking at they've a lot of height in their team. Ruiz is a big kid. Berbatov is a big lad. You've got Senderos. He might be ponderous and slow, but he can win a header in the air. Amor Bieta can win a header in the air. Parker and Sidwell have a decent delivery off a free kick. And that would, to me, like, you're going to concede free kicks. And we know if Lucas plays, he's going to concede free kicks around the edge of his box.
Always.
We will give away corners. Football matches give away corners. And if we don't take our chances, if Suarez and Sturridge have an off day in front of the goal, which they did on Saturday, then you could pay. You can lose. And like, you can see that happening because it's happened to us before.
You want to go back on the agenda there,
Excellent, Danny. Love it.
Waiting in the grassy knoll.
Oh, that's quality. I've enjoyed that. Nice one. Right, well, what we'll do is we'll try and focus down and see just how positive we really are. Andy, we'll come back to you. How do you see the match finishing, prediction-wise?
5-0.
2.
Liverpool.
Good Christ. Steve?
4-1 Liverpool.
This is... Okay. Well, I have to say, do you know what? I'm just going to go. I'll be Phil this week. I'm feeling seriously gloomy about it. I'm nowhere near as optimistic as either of you two chaps. I don't see a big win. If we win, I think it'll be tight. I hope to fuck I'm wrong, but I think it's going to be tight. If we win, I think it'll be by the odd goal.
The reason I'm so optimistic is because I know I'm going to have possibly 20 bottles of Stella inside me before I get to Anfield.
So everything works.
Doesn't matter who scores, I'm celebrating on Saturday.
Well, then there you go. And Mr. Casey, your weekly crazy prediction, please.
Yeah, I'd say 4-0 to Fulham.
Perfect.
But I'm happy about it, so that's why I'm definitely going to 4-0 for Fulham.
Excellent. Brilliant. Okay, let's have a look at our listeners' questions for the week. Our first one is from at Warsaw on Twitter. He asks, would you swap our last 17 years, in other words, the Wenger era, for what they've had at Arsenal? So in other words, would you swap the years that we've had for their Wenger years and the trophies that they hauled in during that time? Mr. Brown.
Oh, I agonised over this, and yes, I would.
You would for three titles,
and Champions League football. I was unfortunate enough to, start supporting Liverpool in an era where I haven't seen Liverpool win a league, and you give me three league titles and Champions League football year after year, snap your hand off.
So no doubt about it. It's a no contest, even with Istanbul, even with the fifth big years.
Istanbul, like, there's just, we could probably do another 5 hours on Istanbul alone. Like, yeah. But three league titles, three Premiership titles,
hard to argue.
321 in total.
Yeah.
I just don't think there's any argument with it.
Hard to argue with that, Andy.
Yeah, if you're going back over 17 years, I suppose you'd enjoy it, titles, you know. But with Arsenal not winning trophies, it creates an atmosphere with the crowd, and it gives some excuses to go after the manager. And I know 1 minute they're slating him, and the next minute he's a hero again. I just don't think it's good for fans that the club aren't bringing in trophies. So if you're talking over 17 years, like, obviously over the last 6 or 7, 8 years, like, you know, well, 8 years now for Istanbul. No, but 17 years, yeah, you'd have to be tempted, wouldn't you?
You'd have to be tempted. Fair enough, that's fairly definitive. Next one is from Nebany on Twitter again, and he asks, can we all admit now that Johnson is crucial to any chances that we're going to have this season of obtaining success? I'll start the ball rolling here. I think the game is different on Saturday if Glenn Johnson plays. Maybe not as different as we would have needed, but I think we'd suddenly have a threat. We suddenly get Sturridge and Suarez looking more threatening because we've got possession of the ball higher up the field and quality possession. I'm not one of these people. I couldn't get over the reaction to John Flanagan getting selected. I thought it was disgusting. And I wasn't one of those people who just hammered on at the poor kid. And give him his due, I thought he did quite well. But when he's going forward, he always looks like he's going to fall over. To be fair, he's not a kid who carries the ball elegantly, fluently. He's not a one-touch merchant. So I think clearly Johnson would have made a massive difference in Saturday. So it's a simple yes for me.
I think if we do have that formation at the weekend, I think Henderson probably goes back and plays. Yeah. I just think that's the likelihood. On Johnson, sorry to just jump in there. We've all had a go at Johnson when he plays right back and then he falls asleep at times. But the overall package, what you get from Johnson, he is one of the best right backs in the league, and I like him.
Okay, lovely, Phil.
Johnson's crucial to playing that three at the back system because he's a natural wing back, in as much. That system shouldn't have been played as soon as he was declared unfit for the game. If we were going to be using Flanagan, it made the system unstable, and it meant that Flanagan did his best to play as a wing back, but didn't get as high up the pitch as Johnson would have had. So it allowed the Arsenal wing backs to push on and then create all the 2v1s that happened in the centre midfield.
Okay, right. Our next question. This is from a chap who I had to speak to about how to pronounce his name because I wanted to get it right. It's from at @Mike_Kroch, who is a man of Danish extraction, apparently. He asks, why is Alan not getting even a sub appearance? Well, that's a pretty straightforward question, and it's something I think an awful lot of us have been wondering about. Phil, your idea about Alan?
Maybe he didn't pay his subs.
In the club. Okay, nice one. Christ. Stephen, any reason in your mind why...
No subs, no game. That's the real one.
No subs, no game. Thanks, Phil.
I'm baffled by it. I genuinely can't answer that question because I just don't know. I really, really don't know.
Yeah, it makes very little sense. I know there are a lot of rumours going around about injuries, and there's talk about, you know, kids and tiredness, but that's all bollocks, really, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
It's there's something definitely going on that we don't seem to know about.
Not when you're the one that said that kids can affect them, which is me, so no, it is bollocks.
Sorry, Phil, Jesus, oh, just offending you left, right and centre. Last question from the listeners today is from a chap who's supplied some real gems thus far, so we wanted to get him on this evening's one. It's from @LScouse, and he asks... What is the perfect number of baubles to hang on your Christmas tree? Now, I heard Phil getting straight back to him here because Phil's got some redefined concepts about what the perfect number of baubles is. So can you come straight in here, Chief, please?
Yeah, 11.
11?
11 baubles.
Can you explain that to me, mate? Is there some sort of sci-fi theory behind this? Some sort of Buck Rogers bullshit behind this?
No, it's just 11.
Just 11?
You need to go sort of... If you're looking at the Christmas tree, you're thinking one up top, and then you work your way down through the tree. So it's 11.
What sort of formation?
Christmas tree formation. Obviously, the Christmas tree formation.
Andy's shaking his head here. The man's. He's not sure about this one.
Just walk straight in there.
Go on, Kevin.
I thought there was a hidden meaning in the question.
No, it's about baubles.
I mean, you're laying rain. Just when you're...
Yeah. I don't fucking know.
Guys, you're absolutely stumping us here. Stephen's leading in. Stephen's got here.
It's the question is how big the baubles are.
Yeah, it's all about the bigness of the baubles, yeah.
Yeah, my Christmas tree at home has the potential... It must be an even number. It has to be an even number.
Right.
It cannot be... an uneven number. Last year there was 39 baubles on our Christmas tree. We bought a pack of 40, one broke, so I had to break a second one because it has to be an even number.
So then there was only 38.
Yeah, I know, but there would have been 39 until I broke the other one.
So you broke one on purpose?
Yes.
Okay.
So you get this is better not be listening to this.
Do you get new ones every year?
No. Won't be getting them this year. We've 38, exactly.
What the hell are you people doing? I've got about 300 baubles on my Christmas.
No, you see, it depends on the size. These are big baubles with feathers inside them. Fancy shit.
This takes me about 3 hours with my daughter every year. Is 11?
What type of baubles do you have?
They're fucking tremendous baubles. Anyway.
Are they shiny ones?
They are shiny and beautiful.
And are they labelled or not? Like, I've got a couple of Harrods ones.
I have a couple of what?
Harrods baubles on the show.
Harrods baubles. Would you jog on, right? Okay, let's get this wrapped up. I can't actually take any more. Okay, we need to do a little bit of admin at the end here. So can I thank our guests tonight? Dave Hendrick, first of all, for joining us. Plenty of interesting shouts to get people Googling or debating after the pod. You can read Dave's thoughts on theliverpoolword.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Hendrick TLW. Thanks to Rob Canavan from the Final Third podcast. You can listen to that on iTunes, obviously after us. You can follow the lads on at @third_final. And Rob himself is at Whites Fan. If you're a lost Fulham fan who, for some reason, has been listening to an LFC podcast. Thanks to the Goat Bar and Grill for the hospitality beer and background noises, which will help Phil immensely when he's editing later on. And thanks to my fellow day trippers, Andy Young, Stephen Brown, Phil Casey. I've been Trev Denny. We'll speak to you next week.